affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute mark. Affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 30 seconds. Mark.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
I scarcely know where to begin. 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, you'd think it would be restful. Not hardly. Saturday was okay. Some nice football to watch. But Sunday, oh, the Sunday talk shows. And some were better than others, and I've got boatloads of sound for you from it, from Sunday, and from today, too, because big-time Dick Cheney came out of his, his spider hole to reiterate the fact that anyone who dares criticize dear leader's war plan is, in fact, a full-blown traitor. Reprehensible. That's the word he was using. They are reprehensible. And yet, in all the blather from all the talking monsters from the Bush administration, not once did anyone refute the central fundamental data that John Murtha was putting forward last week. Not once. They didn't refute at all his claim about Iraqi unemployment. They didn't refute his claim about the polling numbers from the poll that the British Ministry of Defense generated that says 80% of them want us the hell out of there. No refutation of Congressman Murtha's facts. Nothing but the plain old, same old, same old. Hateful, don't argue with us, we know what's good, we're the grown-ups, we're in charge, we know better than you because we like to kill people and blow things up. Pitiful, really. Cheney went, he went to a luncheon or some such, I don't know, smorgasbord, dinner on the ground, picnic, at the American Enterprise Institute today. The American Enterprise Institute is, of course, one of these rabid right-wing, frothing-at-the-mouth, if it's not moving, screw it, if it is moving, shoot it, you know, Republican-type organizations. So, you know, it's not like he was in any sort of a hostile crowd. But that having been the case, that being the case, let's do, before we go to the first break, let's get a little bit of big-time Dick chattering away at the AEI. Let me see here. What do we want first? Yeah, of course, it's important to note, well, the most important part for any in any Republican discussion of why we're in Iraq is to note where the fault really lies, and you'll be able to figure
they
it out.
They concluded, yeah. As the President and I had concluded, and as the previous administration
Aha!
had concluded, that Saddam Hussein was a threat.
Yeah, see, it's all Clinton's fault. Talking point number one, it's all Clinton's fault. And he was talking about the senators who vote and congressmen who voted for the war and then decided it wasn't such a good idea. And he's still pushing that same old, tired, sickening lie that, you know, oh, well, they had the same information we had. That was taken care of by former Florida Senator Bob Graham over the weekend. He had an op-ed piece in the Washington Post. And he made it abundantly clear that no, they didn't. People really didn't have the same thing that the Bush administration had. It was an entirely different kettle of fish. In fact, he talked about the national intelligence estimate that he ordered be done for the Congress, and what a rosy and beautiful thing it was when it came back, how it bore very little resemblance to anything approaching reality. So when Big Time Dick says, well, they had the same information that everybody else had. Well, here's what Bob Graham said in the Washington Post. The president's attacks are outrageous. Yes, more than 100 Democrats voted to authorize him to take the nation to war. Most of them, though, like their Republican colleagues, did so in the legitimate belief that the president and his administration were truthful in their statements that Saddam Hussein was the gathering menace. As chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence during the tragedy of September 11, 2001 and the run-up to the Iraq War, I probably had as much access, says Graham, to the intelligence on which the war was predicated as any other member of Congress. And, you know, go to WashingtonPost.com, and you will see the body of this this editorial comment. He said, there were troubling aspects to this 90-page document, the National Intelligence Estimate. While slanted toward the conclusion that Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction stored or produced at 550 sites, it contained vigorous dissents on key parts of the information, especially by the Departments of State and Energy. Particular skepticism was raised about aluminum tubes. Remember the aluminum tubes that were offered as evidence Iraq was reconstituting its nuclear program? As to Hussein's will to use whatever weapons he might have, the estimate indicated he would not do so. He would not do so unless he was first attacked. Okay? Even if he had them, there was no way he was going to use them in a first strike. That's what the National Intelligence Estimate said. Now, compare that, you know, it was fear-mongering all the way through. Oh, Saddam has a nuclear weapon, and he's going to start paddling his little rubber ducky raft across the Atlantic Ocean, and he's going to sail it right into Charleston Harbor! Because he's just that menacing. Oh, he's got anthrax. He's got smallpox. Oh, he's got the heartbreak of psoriasis, and he wants to use it on us. That was then. This is now. Yeah. Now, Cheney's doing it again today.
Sudden withdrawal from Iraq should answer a few simple questions. Would the United States and other free nations be better off or worse off with Zarqawi, bin Laden, and Zawahiri in control of Iraq?
Yeah, you get that? Play it again so we can hear that. Well, no, don't.
Those who advocate a sudden withdrawal from Iraq should answer a few simple questions. Would the United States and other free nations be better off or worse off with Zarqawi, bin Laden, and Zawahiri in control of Iraq?
Now, see, that sounds great if you just so happen to be, dumber than a handful of hammers. Okay? if you're just so stupid that you take a statement like that on face value, oh, okay, we're about, no, we wouldn't be better off. No, I don't suppose so. Because we would suddenly withdraw and the Iraqi people would elect Zarqawi governor. Jesus. So, if you think about it for a minute, actually, we would be better off, because if Zarqawi and bin Laden and Zawahiri came out into the open, couldn't we take them out pretty quick? Couldn't we get rid of them like that? Like that? Sure we could. If we wanted to. I mean, I thought that's what the whole flypaper theory of Iraq was about, wasn't it? We were going to draw them all into Iraq. And then we were just going to pick them off like shooting fish in a barrel, right? Wrong, not quite. Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Time in a small cottage lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house!
Exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged on to energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer death, killing more than breast, prostate, colon, and skin cancer combined. Early detection of lung cancer, when it's most treatable, is key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Learn your risk and the symptoms of lung cancer. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just a few of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Treatment may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss treatment options with your doctor. For more information on lung cancer risk, symptoms, detection, and treatment, visit www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder from the Radiological Society of North America.
Tornadoes have been reported in several neighboring states.
Small business owner Jonathan Harlan of Jackson, Tennessee.
Living in Tornado Alley, you kind of get used to dealing with them. You just pray one doesn't hit your area. Late Sunday night, just before midnight, an F4 twister touched down in Jackson, leveling our downtown. There was nothing left of our building, just piles of bricks and concrete. We lost everything. Fortunately, backup systems were in place. Employees knew what to do and worked from other locations. Because we were prepared, our clients never knew the difference.
Whether it's a natural disaster or a terrorist attack, every business needs an emergency plan. A plan can save lives, company assets, and your entire business at little or no cost to your company. You can't control what happens, but you can be prepared. Visit www.ready.gov today. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
At home and rolls her spastic eyes, but every weekend
Welcome back. Almost 20 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. The phone numbers, of course, 304-658-3333 and 877-443-2366. Bob@headonradio.com is the email address. In Cheney's Blatherfest today, there were a couple of little moments of truth. Not a lot of them, but a couple. And one of them came, let's see. Came here.
Day after day, Iraqis are proving their determination to live in freedom, to chart their own destiny, and to defend their own country.
That's true. How do I know it's true? Leaders of Iraq's sharply divided Shiites, Kurds, and Sunnis, seeking common ground for their political future together, agreed today there should be a timetable for the withdrawal of foreign troops and that resistance was the right of all. Listen to that. That's the Iraqi government saying that the Iraqis have the right to resist us, our buddies, that democracy that we're growing over there. Oh, it just makes you all tingly. You want to jump up and sing the national anthem? Not really. No, saying that resistance was the right of all, but that acts of terror should be condemned. Should be. Might be. Ought to be. Not sure if we're gonna. Those are our buddies. You know, Ahmed Chalabi's government. That's the government that Cindy Sheehan's son, Casey, and about 2,100 other fine, upstanding, decent Americans died for. Died for. So, apparently Jack Murtha wants us out. Most of the American people want us out. The Iraqi government wants us out. The Iraqi people want us out. The only people who don't want us out are the people who aren't fighting it. Cheney wants to stay there till hell freezes over. George Bush knows that if he gets out, he's got nothing, his administration is done, and he can just as well go back to Crawford for the next 2-3 years. But they want to stay the course. Getting real tired of that that little canard. Oh, we got to stay the course. So, let's go to the phones. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing good. You?
Reasonably well.
Get through the weekend okay?
Yeah, I got a lot done, rearranging books and things like that.
Good.
You know how that is. And I'll tell you a little story in just a second. But, you know, what you're saying about the Iraqi people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are certainly served as a uniter. I mean, they've been united in a way that they've never been united before.
Yeah, since the time of the prophet's own life.
You got it. You got it. And I still want to hear Jeff call in and tell us what good things are happening over there. I mean, I'm waiting for that.
Good luck.
You don't think you'll have the...
Nah.
The cojones to call in?
Nah. I don't think so.
Listen, you know, state's been just so heavy sense of humor today, and I'll tell you a little story about King George V, okay?
Okay.
And this is totally unrelated, but a little humor wouldn't hurt. He had this foreign minister to France named Sir Samuel Hoare, spelled H-O-A-R-E.
Yes.
And the guy had screwed up real bad with the Cato stay in Paris and had to be relieved. And so when George V was talking to his successor, Harold Macmillan,
mm-hmm.
he said, I told him, he said, we'll send no more coals to Newcastle and no more whores to Paris.
Ba-dum-bum.
And said the fellow didn't even laugh.
That's just sad. That was, I mean, you know, for a Hanoverian to come up with that, that's pretty good.
That was pretty good. And that old man had on his desk, you know, in spite of his gruffness and the mistakes he did make, he did have a sign on his desk, and I think it was written by Stephen Ambrose, a Quaker. And it said on that plaque on his desk, he said, whatever I do in this life, whatever good I do in this life, let me do it now, for I will not pass this way again.
That works. Well, you know, the Cheneys and the Rumfields would be well advised to take some of that to heart, too, Jim.
I was thinking about that. And that's one of the reasons I was just thinking, you know, here was a man who was not very well educated, and he wasn't any brilliant scholar. And he was basically, he liked to kill animals and lick stamps. And you know, he just waited as Prince of Wales for years before his father died, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But at least there was some sense of decorum and decency and dignity.
But not in this bunch.
No.
And, well, did you catch the story over the weekend about, and I posted a thread, to, a link to it on headonradio.com on the message boards there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the footage or the photograph of George trying to go out the locked door in China, Jim?
I sure did.
Did you see the video of it or just the photo?
I saw the video. It was ridiculous.
You know, I posted it there under a title, Where's Hardy? Because apparently Stan Laurel's running the country. He looked pitiful. If it was anybody but George Bush, I would have felt sorry for him. He just looked pathetic.
He just
looked lost.
He made a complete ass of himself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, I thought, good Lord, what else is going to happen?
I was trying to escape. It didn't work.
Can you imagine that man in a position in which he would have to rely upon his own personal courage and not his retinue?
Oh, he'd collapse. He'd just fall apart. And for all we know, he's been falling apart for the last 5 years, and it's just been, sent by the boards, by his handlers and his flunkies and his cronies.
Well, I mean, not even they can cover it up now, because the whole thing is being unraveled like an old fox, and people are really seeing him for what he is.
Well, and how perfect that image would happen, American media didn't give it a whole lot of coverage, Jim. But
Chinese television did.
Oh, darn right.
And European television did.
Well, the video I saw was from the Netherlands.
Sure.
But the point of it is, how apropos that the image from this trip is one of George Bush once again, Jim, trying to run away from something. He's been running all his life.
You know what bothers me a lot? And I knew a guy back in Fort Jackson who used to have this studio at the EWO. And the EWO is the guy who sits outside his bedroom door with that football, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear war code.
Yeah.
And this guy whom I worked with at Fort Jackson, his name was Jack Palomo, and he had that duty. And he said it was not a very pleasant duty at all. But, you know, to think that right now was in the sound of his voice, George's voice, is at EWO. With those nuclear war codes. And I just wonder, and you know, that doesn't make me feel, I don't sleep very well at night thinking about that.
No, that's enough to bring on the nightmares and the flop sweats. Hey, Jim, we got to get out of here. It's time for the break. Good talking to you.
Okay.
Take care.
Happy snow day.
Hey, thank you. All right, we'll be back. And yeah, I got some more fun with Dick Cheney for you. You'll enjoy it. This is Head On.
Troops. We hear it practically every day. We read it in the papers, on yard signs, on bumper stickers. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. For more than 60 years, the USO has tirelessly maintained a bridge back home for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and coast guardsmen around the world who fight to preserve the freedoms we hold so dear. The USO receives no government funding. It employs only private citizens and volunteers and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people to fulfill its mission. Help us support our troops. To find out more about the USO and how you can help, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at USO.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know,
One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Oh, we're not anywhere done with Big Time Dick yet. He was, as usual, just disgusting today. Sort of growling into the microphone. These people that want to run away are a bunch of lily-livered chickens. Wait a minute. Wait a minute there, five deferment Dick. Who's running away? You ran away. But, check it out.
And our thinking was informed by what had happened to our country on the morning of September 11th, 2001. As the prime target of terrorists who have shown an ability to hit America and who wish to do so in spectacular fashion, we have a responsibility to do everything we can to keep terrible weapons out of the hands of these enemies. And we must hold to account regimes that could supply those weapons to terrorists in defiance of the civilized world.
Second verse, same as the first. There is no... We're 4 years into this, and they're still on the same tired stunt. 4 years in, well, Iraq equals 9/11, 9/11 equals Iraq, Zig Heil.
Does that mean we have to take away all box cutters from the Saudis?
They did it again. I'd scream about it, but I'm tired of it. It's just wearisome. Damn. It's wearisome. I can't stand it anymore. Well, of course, Iraq is a central front on the war on terror because we were attacked on 9/11. No, the Iraqis didn't do it. Jesus. At one point, 70-80% of America was buying into that crap. And like 99% of Fox viewers. But not anymore. We're not believing. What are the president's numbers now? I mean, it's astonishing. 34% they're down to. And this poisonous punk Cheney is still out there. Oh, well, you know, we had to attack Iraq because we were attacked on 9/11. Same old, ancient, tired, aching, bloody little lie. But, you know, he did wrap up in the... in the same... He did wrap up with, some wrapped up in the flag kind of garbage.
We understand the continuing dangers to civilization, and we have the resources, the strength, and the moral courage to overcome those dangers and lay the foundations.
God willing, we will prevail in peace and freedom from fear, and in true health through the purity and essence of our natural fluids. God bless you all.
Yep, that's Cheney. I mean, there's no difference between this crowd and the killers in Dr. Strangelove. Oh, we will prevail in the purity of our precious bodily fluids. These people are just plain bug-sprayed crazy. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
How you doing, pal?
Doing good.
Hey, this is... what he just said, that is everything we've done... Well, I got to get away from my computer.
Yeah.
Everything that we've done is because of what happened on September 11th.
Precisely.
That explains the letters that the Project for a New American Century were writing letters in 1998 to President Bill Clinton to attack Iraq.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. Sure.
Just okay. Well, that's what I...
Well, because, you know, you got...
I was confused there. He must be... Is that clairvoyant or...
Oh, evil genius. Yeah, it's more like Evil stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to remember that Project for a New American Century manifesto from 1995, Wayne, says all America needs is another Pearl Harbor.
And they got that on September 11th.
Yeah, and that book that I've talked about, and I can't remember the title now, about a young man's progress through West Point, and Paul Wolfowitz in June of 2001 in the commencement address to those young Army officers just graduating, telling them, I can't tell you what it's going to be, but be prepared to be surprised. 3 months before 9/11.
Right, and let's be clear that Mr. Wolfowitz was not graduating from West Point.
No. He was addressing the graduates.
Okay.
Yes.
He is another non-server.
True. Yeah. Another one of those who's more than happy to send other people's kids off to die who never felt like taking that risk on himself.
And a lot of them are real quick to call true American heroes cowards.
Right. Yeah. That's another thing that Cheney did today. He said, "No, we're not telling anybody not to dissent from and not to have a discussion about whether this is right or wrong." Of course he is.
They don't watch polls, though.
No, never.
No. They watch what happened to their comments about him being a coward and that most junior member of the House.
Oh, that nasty woman. Oh, they had a black.
Is there a vote for most ugliest?
Oh, I would say.
Word?
She and they. Oh Lord, Saturday Night Live had a blast with her this past weekend.
Well, beauty comes from the heart, you know. So
and I guess
where her heart is.
Exactly.
God. Ugh. Anyway, these people are. They're trying to back up. Well, I mean, it's beautiful. What happened that, you know, shortly after Murthaugh made his comments, and now, you know, oh, he's an honorable man. You know, never mind I called him whatever a day ago, or everybody in my party did. It's sickening. These people are sickening.
Yeah, and, well, you know, Murthaugh caught up with him. I mean, he had a little comment. He said, oh, I like that. I like that a lot coming from a guy with five deferments.
Well, exactly. They messed with the wrong dude this time, I would say. I'm disappointed in a lot of Democrats. I'm very disappointed in John Kerry.
Oh, yeah, coming out and saying, I don't agree with Mr. Murthaugh.
What don't you agree on? You know, the guy, you know, I mean, he didn't say, okay, send the ships, bring them home tomorrow. He didn't say that.
No, he said things like, as soon as practicable.
Yes.
He said, withdraw to the periphery.
Yes.
The way the Republican filth machine characterized it, they had John Murthaugh advocating every American soldier just throwing his gun down and running screaming like a little sissy girl into the desert.
That's exactly right. And what part of that doesn't John Kerry understand? That's what I mean.
I know what you mean. But the spin was immediate. The spin was immediate. Oh, John Murthaugh is calling for an immediate surrender. Cheney said he was calling for a surrender.
That's where they came up with this political game. Okay, we're all going to withdraw. You know, the Republicans introduced some kind of measure that was 400 and something to 3.
Yeah.
An immediate withdrawal.
Right, and the sponsor of the measure wouldn't even vote for his own amendment.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Duncan Hunter is the one who introduced
that. Right?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't vote.
No, he voted against his own resolution.
But he's ready to call all the Democrats who voted against it cowards.
Right.
Right.
God, I despise them, Wayne. Jeez, I despise them.
They are unique, you know. Well, not really unique. They're fascists. Is what they are.
I can't get inside their minds. I can't understand how they think, Wayne.
They're very confused.
You know,
I always thought I was confused.
But if you think about Murthaugh's plan, though, you know, we staged all this invasion of Iraq from Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Dubai and that kind of those places.
Right, why can't we go back there?
He wants to go back there and sit and watch and make sure that the Iraqis can do it themselves. And if it begins to blow up, we'll go and we'll hop back in and take care of things.
Right. Well, I mean, as long as they accept that, you know, whenever we leave, there's going to be a civil war.
Well, there already is one.
Exactly. There already is one.
And this report today, and I'll go into it a little bit later, this report today from the Iraqi coalition.
Yeah.
The leaders of the Kurds, the Shiites, and the Sunnis, They issued this condemnation of terrorism but said resistance is the right of every Iraqi. They gave a whole laundry list of people that Iraqis should not kill.
They better watch that. That's almost like democracy.
Right. But guess who wasn't on the list of please don't kill these people? Us.
Yes.
Apparently, in line with the 65% of the Shiite South who think it's more than A-OK to go to bump off an American soldier whenever possible, they went along with that idea.
Well, and that's exactly what Martha exposed.
Yeah.
You know,
they hate us.
No, we are the enemy.
And if you were an Iraqi, wouldn't you hate us? I mean, if
yes,
you, if,
I would hate you.
You know,
I've said that from the very beginning. You came over here and tried, you know, listen, we're in serious political trouble here, too. Look at this system over here. What if somebody decides, boy, we got to go fix them guys. They're evil. You know, we've become the evil empire, not the people we're fighting. And that's what the representative is saying. We are now the enemy.
Yeah. We're there.
We have to get out.
But I guess there is some little weird knot of Americans left yet, Wayne, who don't understand that if, say, if Canadians were occupying Beckley, wouldn't we be out shooting every Canadian we could get? We could spot.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we try to kill them as often as possible and demoralize them?
Yes.
Because
the insurance companies in that same time period. Want to take a guess what they paid out in claims?
I would imagine it's a fraction of that $330 million.
One-third, $120 million.
They paid in claims.
$210 million in the positive ledger of all the insurance companies.
Oh, somebody's having some champagne and caviar tonight.
Imagine that. It's the worst form. When you're playing against the insurance companies, it's the worst form of betting against the house, Bob.
Yeah. The house always wins.
They have very big calculators. Have you ever heard the phrase actuarial table?
Oh, yeah.
It's all they need to take your money, especially if you multiply you times 1,000 or 100,000. The odds are in their favor. $210 million. And the insurance person, spokesperson, said, well, you know, that's perfectly acceptable. One of the reasons that like that is because we've got to have money in the bank for future occurrence.
Right.
Some enterprising individual looked it up, and the same proportion has been in place for 6 years in a row in the great state of Tennessee. And I'm guessing the great state of West Virginia is
In every state.
Not different than Utah, California, et cetera, et cetera. So let's get real smart about this and remember that it's not a judge giving some woman $2 million because she lost the wrong breast. It's not a judge giving a 68-year-old man $1 million because they took off the wrong leg, meaning he has neither.
Right.
Oh, it's because the insurance companies wrung $330 million out of doctors last year in the state of Tennessee and paid back $120 and claimed they needed to have a little something in the kitty for later.
Nice kitty.
Who does more to lobby in Washington than maybe drug companies? Don't take too long to answer.
No. And in conjunction with the fine folks at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you know, they're the ones that have hung the moniker judicial hellhole on this beautiful state. You know, just slander. You know, if anybody else did it, it would be actionable slander in the courts. U.S. Chamber of Commerce does it. No.
Oh, no. It's simply freedom of speech. Not unlike. We encourage dissent. We encourage discussion. We just don't want it to be of any disagreement to us and with us and show by any factual argument that we are idiots and chimpanzees.
Yeah, or we'll call you a coward or something.
Or put you in jail, or torture you, or send you to some corner of Yugoslavia that nobody can get to. Isn't it funny how George Perley stands up and says, I'm against torture. I'm against torture. And he's got, we don't torture. And he's got his hand behind his back with his little fingers crossed. And he's saying to himself under his breath, in this country, we don't torture in this country. We don't torture
in
the continental United States.
Right.
Much. And if we do, Dick's working on it for us with the Congress to stop the law.
Did you, have you seen the picture too, David, of Dear Leader in China? Trying to get out the...
No, I have not. I have not had access all day to that sort of stuff. So what's the short version? Once again...
It's the funny... It is the... you are an appreciator of fine old-time comedy. Slapstick, physical comedy.
Slapstick comedy.
Our listener, Lawrence, sent me a large-sized version. I'll forward it to you later. Honest to God, he looks like Stan Laurel. With that pathetic, bemused, lost look on his face. He got frustrated at a news conference, David, and tried to storm out when the questioning got a little rough.
So no, hold it. Wait a minute. Point of order. Once again, a grown man is defeated by multi-syllable words with a question mark. After them.
No, the question...
By people that aren't on the payroll.
No, the question that chapped his butt was when one reporter said, President Bush, at the meeting with Hu Jintao earlier, you looked like you were a little off your game.
I heard that audio on radio this morning, and I could see in my mind that I could hear him turning red.
He stormed off to a he stormed off stage right, okay?
Is that where he squawked out something about jet lag?
Yeah.
All right.
And he stormed off stage right to a big set of doors, double doors with great big humongous handles on them. And he grabbed one and it was locked. And he grabbed the other one and it was locked. And then he just turned around and put his hands down to his side like a little boy caught with his hand in the cookie jar and stood there looking like an absolute idiot.
So the leader of the free world was defeated by a doorknob.
Yeah, and then one of his cronies said, Psst, Mr. President, over here. And he turned around and said, I was trying to escape. Obviously it didn't work. Bye now. And disappeared behind the curtain like somebody, you know, leaving the Tonight Show set.
Dennis Gates.
It would have only been funnier if he'd walked into a closet. You know that old gag?
Oh, exactly.
And then people could have hollered, Mr. Bush, come out of the closet!
Well, let's try some time travel.
Okay.
Imagine Jimmy Carter ever being in that situation. Imagine Jimmy Carter frightened by words.
Well, easy there, because every con lurking around this show is going to go, I remember when he was attacked by the rabbit.
All right, let's try again. John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Okay.
By words. Let's try that one.
Yeah.
Dwight David Eisenhower to get on the other side of the aisle. Defeated by words. Harry S. Truman. Defeated by words. A polio victim. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, defeated by word. Ain't gonna happen.
Nope.
Didn't happen. Stood up. Talked to the American people. Bush can't. He gets one question about you came out of a meeting and sounded like you had been slapped by that fella you had lectured a week ago about human rights as the headlines came out about us having prisons in Europe and all over the place. And they pretty much laughed. And Condoleezza had to admit, well, no, they actually haven't addressed any of the things we'd like them to address. But we're going to really turn the heat up on them. And George turns the heat up by trying to turn a doorknob that he can't move. And then he leaves.
Oh, it was pathetic. It was just pathetic, David. And hilarious. But by the same token, my initial inclination was to laugh, but then I immediately began to sort of grieve.
Well, of course,
this is my country. This is me that pathetic idiot is shaming.
To the rest of the world, Bob, George Walker Bush is the distillation of America. He is the hood ornament on the automobile of our life. He is what the rest of the world looks to and then laughs. I'm sure those German intelligence agents were going, well, gee, many Christmas, no wonder he got along so. No wonder he bought into what Curveball had to say. Look at him.
He's as bad as Curveball is. Sure.
No different.
He is. We are calling him Curveball. I think we should call the President of the United States Screwball.
Well,
yeah, it's funny.
I think W's in the bag. Personally, I think W's back in the bag twice in the last week. And it speaks about the opinions of America. Now, give me a minute on this one.
Okay.
Two of the, whatever you want to call them, the Inquirer, the Inquisitor, the, you know, Elvis flies in from Mars to visit his mother and brings her back to life, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Two of those have big, ugly pictures of Bush at the checkout lane saying, President drinking again. Insiders don't want to, but confirm it.
Yeah,
that says a lot about what America expects, enjoys, and thinks they're going to hear from the mainstream media later.
But, of course, we're not.
If the Inquirer can make fun of George W., no wonder those numbers are in the point.
Well, but the thing about the Inquirer, the Sun, the Star, all of that, they have had the Dickens sued out of them lately. So they're very careful about what they print. Anymore in that kind of that realm of salacious stuff. And because they're the Inquirer, no one bothers to refute it. But that silence is also acceptance. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, the election in Virginia, he showed up at a Kilgore rally the night before. You recall that?
Oh,
if you see the film, if you see the news footage of that, he is drunk, David. I mean, you've been in a few bars, okay. You've run around a few bands, things like that. You know what a drunk dude looks like.
I've looked in the mirror at the wrong time of the morning, and, yeah, I can recognize that state of being.
He was toasted.
Well,
wasted. Three sheets to the wind. Hammered. Slurring his speech. Had that bloated, you know, the bloated look your face gets.
Vividly.
Yeah. And this was just an experiment. I saw it. I didn't tell anybody in this house what the title of the video was. It was, Is He Drunk? Didn't tell anybody. I brought in Agnes. Then I brought in daughter one, then daughter two, son one, and daughter three. The whole family saw this. And after every one of them, after they watched it, looked at me and said, Is he drunk? Now, when
if he's not, he wasted a lot of money.
Yeah, right. And video footage of him getting off Marine One, the helicopter, comes shambling, stumbling, bumbling off the stairs, grabs Laura for support and slings his arm around her shoulder and comes staggering down the tarmac. America, we don't. I guess maybe they don't want us to realize it because they don't want a national panic. We're in trouble. We're in trouble, David. We're in big trouble. The leader of this country is a sot.
Well,
and there is nobody at the helm, and the ship is foundering. I mean, did you see the magnificent? Did you see the magnificent economic news today?
No, I missed that.
GM's laying off 30,000 human beings, a great number of whom will be down in your neck of the woods in Spring Hill. I guess they're giving up on Saturn.
I thought you had something in a more general nature. Oh, no, I'm very, very, very aware of that situation because that has impact in many parts of my little sphere. Well, getting back to the president, I've told you for a year and a half that when I hear those occasional sound bites from his Saturday morning speech,
mm-hmm.
always, he's hungover, and he has been for a year and a half. If you're only talking to your mother and Condi and Karen Hughes and one other person around the White House.
Harriet Myers.
Boo-hoo-hoo. May I trade her for the ghost of Lincoln in one vowel? Oh, Lord. You and I couldn't make this stuff up. We wouldn't. Nobody would think it was real. But it's the facts of the world swirling around.
It's scary.
Well, Well, I've beaten the daylights out of one of your breaks. I need to get out of the way.
That's all right. Always good to hear from you. But is there a lot of talk about what's going on at Spring Hill down there?
I haven't heard much from where I am because it's going to take a few days for that to really ripple out. Where I lived up until 2.5 years ago, it would be a huge topic because from a Nashville radio station, which is 40 miles south of where I live, and you need to go another 30 to get to Spring Hill, so that's 70 miles away. But a real estate broker was interviewed, and she said, well, I'll sell the same number of properties, but they won't sell for the same money now.
Well, I noticed on the map that of all the plants they intended on closing, Spring Hill was right there. And I mean, GM's not doing anything but Saturn there, are they?
Saturn is saying, they say, and I believe GM to be the second or third greatest liar corporately on the face of God's green earth based on how they approached my homeland in the middle of Tennessee and lied about who was going to work there 18 years ago. They say Saturn is to be protected. They say it's the Saturn Ion that's going away, hence the 1,500 jobs will be eliminated. They say that facility will not be decommissioned. It'll only be put in a holding pattern. They say the Saturn View will be kept, and they intend over the next 12 to 18 months to retool and begin the Saturn hybrid line there. But they're going to begin it with all new employees, and they will be, by virtue of the labor agreement signed 6 months ago, second-tier employees.
Second-rate, second-tier, second-class.
So they will work under a very different labor agreement than any older employee at Saturn Spring Hill.
Where's the UAW in this?
They signed off on it. They gambled that Saturn was simply going to go up and down by 100 in the Spring Hill facility, and that they bought the PowerPoint plus, you know, PowerPoint on steroids presentation that GM had all sorts of new models. And GM has done a credible job of doing better than Ford of bringing out new models. There are a bunch of GM products that are out there that are making it really tough on Ford. They thought the second tier of employees would be the normal pulling in of employees, 200 to 500 a year. They didn't expect, I'm sure, UAW did not expect that 1,500 O-line employees would go away, and to pick a time in the future, 18 months from now, 1,500 or 2,000 would come in, and they would barely recognize the compensation program those kids, those people would be under. You know, it'll be better than working at McDonald's. It ain't going to be nothing like it was for the existing employees.
Yeah, going to have to put that in-the-ground backyard swimming pool on hold.
Yeah.
And the groceries and the new Saturn and, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be buying used cars. They're not going to be buying $300,000 McMansions. They're going to be shopping for houses in my price range.
Well, I had to check in with you, but we do have to hit the break. Always good to hear from you, David.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care. And a break, and when we come back, more of your calls, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Just a kid. I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold
can start my asthma attacks, too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Roof fall accidents have declined significantly in recent years, but they still continue to claim the lives of too many working miners. Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. No miner has to die from a roof fall accident. Miners and mine operators can take steps to reduce the likelihood of these tragic accidents in underground mines. Always follow the approved roof control plan for your mining operation. Make required roof examinations before starting work. Look at the roof closely, listen, and sound it out. Install additional roof support when you encounter adverse roof conditions. Always use maximum supervision and oversight when performing retreat mining operations. Never, ever walk or travel under unsupported roof. Make the right decision. Focus more attention on roof control in underground mines. Thank you for listening.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. The role of the press in a free society is to keep the public informed so that they can be better citizens. To the government and to big business, this can really gum up the works if they want to do something that the people would undoubtedly be against. To that end, both of these will try to manipulate the press into presenting a particular point of view. It's the press's job to cut through the BS and get to the heart of the story. Sometimes someone within the government or a corporation has inside knowledge of illegal activities, and they will contact a member of the press to try to get that story out in the open. The journalist has an obligation to protect the source of that information because the source is risking their careers or even their lives. Reporters can go to jail for not revealing a source if ordered by a court, and it's altogether right that they do so. But that's not what's happening in the case of Judith Miller. The wealthy and ambitious reporter for the New York Times is claiming to have gone to jail to protect her source within the government. But her source wasn't someone trying to prevent something illegal, it was someone breaking the law. She was being used, and she was happy to be used because it furthered her career. Ms. Miller's been fired from her position at the New York Times, but her severance package will be more money than most people will ever earn in their entire lives. In a just world, she would be in prison for many years for her role in abetting the illegal activities of the current administration. But unfortunately, we do not live in a just world. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Welcome back. Okay, I had to sneak off and have a look at the Mountaineer basketball game. Some of the, well, the lead evaporated, but my beloved Mountaineers are, well, when I walked away, they'd gone up by a point, 52-51. My father is sitting in the living room yelling at the TV because, God, he hates Brent Musburger. Of course, I do, too. Brent is one of the great lowlights of American sports play-by-play commentary. Ugh. And how they let him do that game. Ugh. It's just... Ugh. Makes your skin crawl. Back to the phones. Jim's been holding a while. Hey, Jim.
Hey, just a few seconds here.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, reflecting on George's attempted exit, it did look like something that Max Sennett would have directed.
It did!
Yeah, for like Keystone Cop.
Yeah, like I said, if he just walked into a closet, it would have been perfect.
Well, listen, I understand that Jeff replied, and I was getting a Windows update, and I missed it.
Doggone it.
What did he have to say?
Oh, well, we talked Mountaineer basketball for a little bit, and then he was talking about the 550, what, pounds, tons, I don't know what, of uranium that he says that we found in Iraq.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's news to me and everybody else. I mean, we're having a major crisis in the government right now because of a forgery, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yellow cake, all that stuff?
Oh, this wasn't the yellow cake, though.
Oh, this is different stuff, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What is it, heavy water from Norway? What do they do? What's the name?
No, it was enriched uranium.
Really?
Yeah, and the liberal media just wouldn't report it.
I tell you something, I just wonder about that. Anyway, I just say this again to Jeff. I want to make him an offer he can't refuse, okay? I can hook him up with a recruiting battalion down there. They'll come get him, take him down to the BEPS, and we can get him over there in Iraq and let him contribute to all the good that's being done over there.
Well, there is a lot of good. I've got a story right here. You might be interested to hear this, Jim. British-trained police operating in Basra have tortured at least two civilians to death with electric drills.
Electric drill.
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh.
Can you imagine being killed with an electric drill? That's the kind of stuff that comes out of those movies that you see that have the warnings that no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, it's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre stuff. And basically, it's stuff that some of the more perverted elements of the Gestapo used during World War II. I mean, they used all types of methods to extract information from people, to include electric drills and other types of apparatus that are, you know, designed to create a lot of pain and suffering and, you know, just contribute to man's inhumanity to man.
In seeing some of the reports about the secret torture chamber that was uncovered under the Interior Ministry last week, some of those people were tortured with drills too, and you saw the holes. And I mean, we're not talking about a little dry, little bitty bit. We're talking about big old, you know, great big honking paddle-headed bits.
Now, who use these instruments of torture? Are we talking about Saddam's people, or are we talking about
Brits, the British?
The British did this.
Yes.
Well, you know those special action squads, they don't play around. I mean, I'm not in any way condoning that type of behavior. You know that.
Yes.
But, I mean, before we reinstituted the fact that we could go after another head of state, they used to do our dirty work for us.
Well, that's true, and we've done some for them, too.
But, I mean, we would definitely, if we had somebody that we wanted to take a walk or a ride, we'd get the SAS boys in on it, and, you know, they're pretty good at that sort of thing, and they really don't care.
Well, this is just, it's not going to get any better, Jim. It's not going to get any better.
Well, maybe if people like Jeff and Steve O'Brien and some of the people that support all this stuff, maybe if they will decide to serve their country and put their money where their mouth is, the situation might be ameliorated or made better. What do you think?
Well, you know, we can certainly... We can't meet recruiting goals. They need some help.
You know, right now, under volunteer Army standards, they said they would never take a Cat 4, okay?
They're taking them.
Take Cat 4s.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom of the barrel. So I'm sure these boys had no problem.
Take them
And I'll be glad to give them a personally handwritten endorsement.
Well, you've passed along the offer, Jim.
And, you know, I mean, hey, I just believe in giving people an opportunity in which they can excel.
Well, I mean, you wore the uniform. What's wrong with somebody else doing it?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure they get one to fit them. And they'll probably lose a little bit of weight.
Yeah, a little bit.
But anyway.
Run off that water weight.
Well, yeah. And as far as George drinking, maybe Roseanne sent him a bottle of Kentucky Sour Mash to congratulate him on 20 years of sobriety. Who knows? See, that's what she did to her business partner on the show, Leon Carr. Remember Leon?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the girls find a birthday present or a present from Roseanne to Leon saying, congratulations on 5 years of sobriety. And even Darlene, as mean as she was on that show, said, God, that's cold.
Well, I tell you what, go... If you look around, let's see, canofun.com, okay? canofun.com. You've got a broadband connection. It's right up there toward the top of the page. Is he drunk? Look at this video and form your own opinion.
Well, he may have fallen off the wagon.
Oh, I don't think he fell. I think he jumped.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, that's a sorry state of events when you've got a chief of state that appears to be inebriated.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not telling anybody how to live their lives.
No, I mean, I'm not either. But, I mean, you know, there are certain things you can do behind. I mean, personally, I have no objection to someone having a cocktail. Franklin D. Roosevelt loved to mix them. John Kennedy didn't drink much. And I think LBJ, well, God only knows what he did. And I don't think Bill Clinton drank much either.
No, his well, we know what his failings
were. Well, yeah, he had a weakness for the fairer sex, and we'll let go at that.
And the occasional Big Mac.
Right. But, you know, George is supposed to have been on the wagon. And, you know, the thing about it was he used to be such a nasty drunk.
Oh, hey, back when he was running for Congress, Jim, and you know, this is on that long list of crap we've forgotten. Back when he was running for Congress, he drove his car through the picture window of their home after Laura criticized one of his speeches.
Really?
Yeah. That's the kind of drunk George is.
Him got bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Betsy Hart. Well, you know, as drunk as I've ever been, and God knows I have been looped in my day, let me tell you.
Good of you to admit
God.
It.
I mean, you know, I've seen pink elephants walking on the ceiling. But I've never even considered doing something stupid like that.
Drove it right through the window.
Well, you know, there are some people that alcohol just has a real bad effect on. Me, I just sort of get happy, and I'll just say night-night, and I'm gone. But there's some people who get activated and they get real, real angry and belligerent. And that's the kind of drunk he was, because some of his chief closest associates said, thank God he's on the wagon, because he was such a nasty drunk. I mean, really, butt ugly nasty.
Yep.
But anyway, I extend my offer to all these people of being of goodwill. I guess the Jeff and those people are. And, you know, if they need any help, I'll use you as a conduit, and I'll be glad to recommend them.
All right, sounds good. Take it easy, Jim.
Later.
Later. Yeah, and let's see. British-trained police use drills to torture human beings. We don't torture. And then some more of the... why don't he ever give the happy news from Iraq? Bakuba, Dateline. Witnesses and the Iraqi police said U.S. troops opened fire on a crowded minibus north of Baghdad Monday, killing 5 members of the same family, including 2 children, and wounding 4 others. Well, Bob, don't you understand that's collateral damage? You're going to have that kind of thing in war. War is hell, don't you know that? God. We'll go over this in a little bit more after the break. This is Head On.
Hello, may I help you? Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Welcome back. 13 minutes before the hour. God, I love the truckers. No band quite like them anywhere in America, or anywhere else for that matter. Something I mentioned earlier, this report, and this particular copy comes from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. You probably didn't catch it today on the news because there was about 3 hours of continuous coverage of an airplane that was having landing gear trouble. There are days that I want to throw something at the TV. I just want to drive a 2x4 right through it. Fox, MSNBC, CNN, and Headline News spent 3 bleeding hours on the Nike corporate jet circling over Hillsboro, Oregon, because it had landing gear trouble. There's a movie out right now, Good Night and Good Luck, about the stirring fight for freedom that was mounted at CBS and led by Edward R. Murrow during the McCarthy witch hunts. And if you compare that bravery and that dedication and that passion and hunger for justice and fair dealing with a babbling bimbet, sexist again. I'm going to get in trouble. Sorry. Some babbling idiot. See, you can do that without reference to gender. Some babbling idiot. Well, Lou, it looks as though the fog is settling in on the airstrip. I don't see any flame retardant foam spread on the asphalt yet, and there's no emergency trucks. What do you suppose they're going to do? 3 hours! 3 bloomin' hours! While this plane circled Oregon, burning up its fuel. You know, to make it safer for the landing. And then at the end, yeah, they cycled it through a couple more times. The landing gear came down. The plane touched down. No problem. And I guarantee you, every anchor at every cable news outlet was sitting there when the plane touched down safely going, damn. We really could have had a good one there. That would have made a big mess, and we would have had it live. See, that's the thing, getting the scoop. So, with all of that going on, you can understand not having any news coverage of, say, big-time Dick Cheney's little trip to the American Enterprise Institute, where he told the assembled faithful that, there was, they weren't trying to dissuade anybody from, from disagreeing. There was no proscription against criticizing the administration.
Nobody is saying we should not be having this discussion.
Send Congressman Murtha a message that cowards cut and run.
Yeah, see how they work? Oh, no, we're not trying to discourage anybody. No, they've got their filthy little foot soldiers out there. This nasty, vile, hateful woman from southern Ohio whose only experience in life has been harassing other women for trying to make decisions about their own bodies. At 75 days in the house, and she trots up to the microphone and calls a 34-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps a coward. I'm still angry about that. You know, Murtha evinced some class about it. She said, well, you know, I wasn't there. You know, she's a new member. Sometimes new members are all full of vinegar, and they want to try to make a mark. I wasn't there. I try not to let this get personal. So, you know, good for him. But I hope the people in her district recognize how thoroughly she has embarrassed them. I hope the people in her district who voted for her instead of Paul Hackett, an Iraq War veteran, understand the difference now between chicken hawks and those who have been there. I don't suppose Paul Hackett would have stood on the floor of the House of Representatives and called a 34-year veteran of the Marine Corps a coward, him being a Marine himself. I just don't suppose that would have happened. So, you know, there was so much that wasn't on television today on the news channels because of that stupid Gulfstream jet circling over Hillsboro, Oregon, filled with high and powerful executives of the Nike Corporation on their way to Toronto, Canada. I used to be proud of having been a journalist. We tried back then when the world was young and dinosaurs roamed the earth. But you know, I was there when I was there for that signal moment when TV news was forever transformed. I was at CNN during the story of the rescue of young Jessica McClure from that well in, oddly enough, Midland, Texas. And I submit to you that was a defining moment in TV news, because at that point it became not about what was, it became about what was sensational and not about what was newsworthy. So you can be forgiven for having missed this story that was reported in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer about the joint Iraqi declaration asking very nicely, telling us it's time to get out of their country. The conference's final statement also stated that, quote, resistance is a legitimate right for all people. A nod to Sunni Arab leaders who have sought to distinguish Iraqi insurgents they say are resisting the U.S. presence in Iraq from terrorism. The statement added, and here's the quote, "Terrorism is not legitimate resistance, and thus we condemn terrorism and the acts of violence, killings, and kidnappings that target Iraqi citizens, civil, governmental, and humanitarian organizations, national wealth, and houses of worship. We ask that they be immediately confronted." And, of course, you heard what was not in that list. Iraqi citizens, civil, governmental, and humanitarian organizations, national wealth, and houses of worship. Not a word in there about not blowing up American soldiers. Yeah, check out Dick Cheney.
Day after day, Iraqis are proving their determination to live in freedom, to chart their own destiny, and to defend their own country.
And that's what that is, isn't it? Nothing in there about not killing American soldiers. Why? Because just like Jack Murtha said, we have become the enemy over there. We had a chance to be the good guys. George Bush had a chance to put in play a situation where, yeah, they would have put statues up to him. It would have been insane, but they would have done it. We could have blown through there, gotten rid of Saddam, and blown back out again and said, you're free. We believe in freedom. You sort it out. And one way or the other, they're going to do that. And they're going to do it after we're gone. If that's next month, 6 months from now, next year, or 10 years from now, that's when they'll do it, after we're gone. But until then, this Iraqi position paper suggests that they're going to go on killing us. Why? Because we're there, and it's not our land. They will, you know, if they want to be free, they will take care of the Zarqawis. They will take care of the wild-eyed clerics. Because none of those problems existed before George Bush attacked them, did it? No, it didn't. All right. Break time. We'll be back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle. For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
One, two, three, four. Joseph's last dream before he passed away. On the godforsaken Oklahoma day, he saw a purple sunrise through the mountain mist. He felt his first wife give him a perfect holy kiss. Her face was shining brilliant in a sky of blue, and her smile told him he had no more to lose. Joseph's last dream then continued on. He saw a stillborn baby beside a mountain pond. He saw a young brave racing up the mountainside. They voted him their leader the day his daddy died. Joseph's last dream then turned into the times when gentleness could overcome the anger in his mind. Of giant herds of ponies with mountains to the east that were still unscarred by the white devouring beast. Beyond the dream, a woman said, "Come here quick, he's dying. His soul has left this awful place, to the mountains flying." Chief Joseph's last dream as he passed away. A 100,000 faces rising up to pray. They crossed over the mountains, shimmering and white. They passed right through the setting sun into the orange light.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. Make the last one count. I'm Bob, just like B-Rez said. And the other phone number, of course, 304-658-3333. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. And I've got a confession to make. I snuck off to watch the very tail end of the Mountaineer basketball game during the top of the hour break. We was robbed. There was a that was a mugging to end the game. But, of course, you know, you make those free throws. It's six of one, half dozen of another. But it seemed like a real chintzy call there at the end. 76-75, Texas over Mountaineers. Damn. Back to the phones. Gary's with us and been waiting. Appreciate it. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Hey, I just wanted you to know that I've cut off my newspaper. I quit watching TV. I quit listening to the radio. I get all my nonpartisan political news from Bob Kincaid.
20,000 starving comedians in the world, and I got a funny truck driver on the phone.
Well, that and the Globe, you know. I sometimes buy it at the...
Well, yeah.
I have to find out about George Bush's drinking problem.
Well, you know, it's the Weekly World News for me or nothing. You know, Robin the Bat Boy. You know, I was really worried about Jenna Bush when she was going to Texas and he was stalking her down there, wanted to be her boyfriend. You know, Robin the Bat Boy started out in West Virginia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the little Bat Boy dude that's periodically on the cover of the Weekly World News. Yeah, he's a West Virginian.
Is he any any akin to what, the Mothman or something like that?
I think he's probably the love child of the Mothman and the Braxton County Monster.
Oh, okay. Oh boy. Hey, did you get those? Did you get that article I sent you? That Russian guy wrote Orlov.
Yeah.
What, did you get a chance to read it?
Yeah, I browsed it. I thought it was pretty fascinating, really. What was the title of it again? I'm not worth a damn tonight. Help me here. What was the title?
Russian lessons, post-Soviet.
Post-Soviet lessons for the new America or something like that.
For post-America, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, this guy makes the argument that Russia fell, and we're going the same way that they're going, and we're about maybe 20 years behind the times.
Well, I don't think that's so out there.
Oh, I don't either. And he more or less detailed though when they fell. How things worked out over there. For example, when the economy just totally gave up over there, life didn't change all that much for a lot of people because they all lived in state-owned housing.
Yeah.
In America, if the same thing happens, a lot of people are going to be in trouble because they don't live in state-owned housing. They're going to be on the street. And just a lot of different things like that.
Well, aren't we seeing that with the aftermath of Katrina, Gary?
Well,
FEMA's throwing what 150,000 people out of hotel rooms, effective like next week.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that. Well, I mean, it's paradoxically enough, the communist system when it fell, it allowed for an easier landing than it would have if ours fell.
Well, there's nothing but air below our high wire. There's no net. You know, we used to talk about Social Security, and I know you don't like Social Security, but we used to talk about it being a safety net. And we talked about the social obligation of the United States not to let a single American go hungry. Did you see, I forget if it was the House or the Senate last week, Gary, that cut, that made provisions to cut some, what, 250,000, 700,000 maybe people off of the food stamp rolls?
Well, you know, Bob, what gets me is we're paying really good money for this. We're paying the average American shelling out about 56% of their income altogether, whether they realize it or not, that goes to the government. But it's really it's how it's distributed. It's distributed in ways like this senator up here. What did he get? What $200,000-$400,000 to raise greyhounds again this year?
Yeah,
stuff like that. I mean, it's everybody I know. They say, well, you know, I'm tired of paying for those bums on welfare and everything. And I tell them all the same thing. I say, look, there might be a lot of money they're getting, money that they're not, people they're getting money they're not entitled to. But that's just a distraction. The real money is going to these big corporations.
The real money's in the corporate welfare.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm sure you followed the Bridge to Nowhere story.
I've heard some about it, yeah.
Up in Alaska, the $50 yeah. million dollars for a bridge to an island that has 50 people on it.
Yeah.
There was so much hell raised over that that they ostensibly nixed that item out of the bill. And, you know, so the foo fraud dies down a little bit. But then it turns out Alaska gets the money anyway, because Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska stood up in the well of the Senate and said, by God, if you take that money away, I will resign from the Senate. Now, that's like Oral Roberts coming out and saying, if you don't send me another $500,000, God's going to call me home. You know, that's a bluff you've got to call. You know, well, yeah. We'll miss you, Ted, but, you know, it's been real. Later, you're not getting the money. No, Alaska got the $50 million bucks.
Well, you know what, Guy, I mean, you remember when Tom DeLay said that they had cut the budget to the bone, there was no more fat to cut?
Yeah.
Do you understand how conservatives like me are so disgusted with these people who call themselves conservatives who aren't a bit conservative at all? All they want to do is spend every dime they can get their hands on.
Oh, sure. And, well, it's just a question of whose ox is getting gored.
Exactly. That's all it's all about.
I don't want $50 million for bridges to nowhere. There was a perfectly serviceable ferry running there.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. If they're going to spend the money, I would rather see them spend it on people than spend it on corporations.
Well, sure.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want them to take the money in the first place, but if they're going to.
How long, given the announcement by General Motors today, Gary, how long until we start hearing talk of a Chrysler-style GM bailout?
Well, don't even bring it up.
Well, I mean, realistically, it could happen.
Well, you know, one of the big differences, though, is Chrysler had Lee Iacocca.
Yeah.
And General Motors, I'm very familiar with General Motors. I've had a lot of friends and family that's worked for them. And they've always been, in my opinion, just a renegade corporation. And how they could take so much money. I mean, you realize at one time they were like the richest corporation in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And run it into the ground.
Well, and did that largely through ignorance.
Well, it's the culture. It is a culture of arrogance that you would not even believe.
Oh, I would. Because it's the same corporate culture of arrogance that prevailed in most of American industry. This idea of everything's going to be good and everything's going to be static forever.
Well, did you see my...
It wasn't. It isn't.
Did you see my post a little bit a while back about a GM car that I owned?
I must have missed that one.
Well, to put it in a nutshell, GM has really been building inferior products compared to what the Japanese have been sending over.
Well, sure. Just the mileage you can get out of one. You know, there's a reason Americans started buying Japanese automobiles.
Exactly, there's a reason for it. But these people at General Motors and Ford, they will not wake up to that fact. They think simply because they're an American company that you're going to buy their products forever and ever and ever. And I got news for them. I'm not going to buy American-made junk if I can get something somewhere else that's going to do me a better job, because I'm just like everybody else. I have to work hard for my money.
But the thing is, Gary, there's an open question as to what American-made means. There are 150,000 Americans who work for Toyota building the most popular car in the world, the Camry, and they do it in the United States. Is that an American car?
Well, I think the lines have been blurred in this world that we live in, because corporations are multinational now, and there's probably no such thing as American company.
Yeah, my American truck was built in Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, I mean...
Well, to be fair here, what really has done General Motors in isn't the workers or the workmanship. It's
no.
The engineering.
Well...
They have just crappy, rotten engineering.
I always thought, you know, when I get in a car, you know, I'm into my creature comforts and... I pay attention to the ergonomics. You know, can the driver reach everything on the dashboard? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I always thought that GM had really shoddy plastic work.
Yeah, they do.
You know, along the dash, the buttons, the knobs, and because you know, in terms of buyer satisfaction and owner happiness, if the thing throws a rod going down the road, you're going to be unhappy. But in some ways, you're almost as unhappy if you go to roll the window down and the knob comes off in your hand.
Yeah.
Now, you know, certainly it's not just GM. I was a little boy. We had bought a brand new 1971 Chrysler Newport, Gary. It was August, and the next day we were leaving Alabama and starting out for West Virginia. We got the, you know, they serviced it and everything. You know, you wait a couple hours after you buy the car while they pretty it up and ready it up and all of that stuff. And then the next morning, we had a trunk was loaded. You know, off we go toddling up the road. We get to Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, and a guy starts flagging us down, going, "Hey, hey, your gas tank is falling off." You know, a full tank of gasoline and kicking sparks out, you know, 10 feet behind the car.
That must have been one of them cars that was built on Monday.
I'm guessing it was, or a Friday maybe. But we got it to the Chrysler dealership. The gas tank had been wired on with a coat hanger.
Wow.
Brand new. I mean, we're not talking about some, you know, Joe's used car lot. This was Detroit's finest iron with a big old 383 four-barrel engine, you know. And the gas tank was wired on with a coat hanger.
Well, you know, that's why, you know, story after story after story like that, it's why people do not want to buy American-made cars.
But it's not just the American manufacturers, Gary. You got to bear in mind, you know, the Toyota hybrids are out there, those beautiful Volkswagen diesels that'll, you know, burn canola oil. Mercedes has been making a gorgeous diesel engine for eons. And yet at the same time, you know, Daimler-Benz owns Chrysler.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they're putting a what I call a consumer diesel engine, you know, one for just getting around. I'm not talking about that big old honking Cummins turbo diesel. The only thing they're putting that diesel in is the Jeep Liberty diesel.
Uh-huh.
That's it. No, you know, no plans. Chrysler has no plans for a hybrid that I'm aware of. They have no plans to expand the diesel line beyond that Jeep Liberty. There's a market there, and the market's going to get stronger as, gas is dropping a penny a day. It's not going to go back to a dollar a gallon.
I don't think you're going to see gas go below $2 a gallon.
No. That's our happiness point.
Yeah, in fact, I posted an article up on the message board. There are people that say that it predicted several years ago that the peak oil day was Thanksgiving today.
I saw that, yeah.
And so it's going to go nowhere but up. But, you know, where is the vision of these companies? They have no vision whatsoever. The only thing they can think of is build a car, put as many accessories on it as you possibly can so you can charge as much as you possibly can, then engineer it so after a predetermined number of miles it breaks down and you have to keep running back to the...
Dear, I think you cut Gary off there. Sorry, Gary, give us a yell back. Technical difficulties. We'll get this stuff right. But I understand what Gary's saying. This is...
Sorry, Gary, didn't mean to hit the wrong button. Please call back.
Let's take a break. It's that time anyway. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know what this is. This is Head On.
Time in a small cottage lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house!
Exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged on to energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer death, killing more than breast, prostate, colon, and skin cancer combined. Early detection of lung cancer when it's most treatable is key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Learn your risk and the symptoms of lung cancer. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just a few of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Treatment may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss treatment options with your doctor. For more information on lung cancer risk, symptoms, detection, and treatment, visit www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder from the Radiological Society of North America.
Tornadoes have been reported in several neighboring states.
Small business owner Jonathan Harlan of Jackson, Tennessee.
Living in Tornado Alley, you kind of get used to dealing with them. You just pray one doesn't hit your area. Late Sunday night, just before midnight, an F4 twister touched down in Jackson, leveling our downtown. There was nothing left of our building, just piles of bricks and concrete. We lost everything. Fortunately, backup systems were in place. Employees knew what to do and worked from other locations. Because we were prepared, our clients never knew the difference.
Whether it's a natural disaster or terrorist attack, every business needs an emergency plan. A plan can save lives, company assets, and your entire business at little or no cost to your company. You can't control what happens, but you can be prepared. Visit www.ready.gov today. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
After the hour, a couple of quick emails. One with regard to one of the songs Agnes played, Chief Joseph's Dream. David writes in and says, if you've never read any detail, the man I suggest you do. Well, he says, don't. Wait, I'm not sure. Maybe a mistype. His life and the story of it could easily take over yours. He almost certainly was the most holy, brave, and caring man ever alive in the Northern Hemisphere. If nothing else, it is the very best abstract of what it means to truly trust an American government. Well, the whole story of our treatment of the Native Americans is replete with that kind of duplicity. I wish I had the quote on hand. Somebody can probably find it. There was maybe a Chickasaw leader named Colbert, northwest Alabama, northeast Mississippi, resisting the forced removal of his people, who also made another one of those most impassioned speeches. And he's largely forgotten. An email from our pal Peter, listening over there, hanging out in the Tom Hartman chat room. Bob, I've just seen the Bush tries to escape through a locked door video. I'm so damn embarrassed and angry that I'm at a loss for words. The only reason they shipped this genetic throwback out of the country was because the mindless chimp is incapable of being any help at all in putting the wheels back on the wagon of the bastard Republicans. Better to hide him than risk he speak. However, it's obvious that there is no place in the world to hide the drunken monkey whore. We're a laughingstock in the world. We've demonstrated a historic low in the intellectual capacity of U.S. voters. Bob, things like this are not easily forgotten. The world will snicker about this for many, many years to come. Please make this end. Amen, Peter. Well said. Let's go back to Gary long enough for me to tender an apology. I'm sorry, man.
Hey, well, I thought it was my rotten phone on this end.
No, it was us. We did it, and we're sorry.
Yeah, well, I got three phones, and, you know, what I was talking about, you know, crappy engineering and stuff like that. You know how when you were a kid, the phone seemed like it always worked?
Yeah.
And now you buy these phones, and, like, you know, they work 3 months, and you throw them away and go buy another one.
Right, and they go to the landfill and leach toxic chemicals into it, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's this idea of planned obsolescence out there.
Sure, and the idea of disposable America.
Yeah, and it's getting to a point of being sick. I was reading an article today about what they call McMansions. These people are buying these houses, 6,000 and 7,000 square feet.
Right.
And they're doing it just because they can. There's not any reason for it. Usually it's two people. And what are they going to do with a 6,000 or 7,000 square foot house?
Avoid each other.
Yeah. Well, they don't even furnish them. I mean, you know, they're like, they'll furnish a few rooms, and the rest of it, they got like 15 rooms unfurnished.
Well, see, Agnes and I would like to have a bigger house. Oh, we really, really would. Because there's a whole hell of a lot more of us than there is of house.
Well, I can imagine, but you know.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to go hide behind the washing machine. You know. Yeah, it's she's just cackling over here. I'm going to check to see if an egg's been laid. but yeah, and you know, imagine that, Gary. We're going to have an entire New River Gorge covered in McMansions.
Yeah, and I just don't understand it. It just seems like we're really dividing up in this country into a land of the rich, and then the rest of us out here are just struggling to make it. I mean. You know, go buy a mobile home or something like that, because they're not making any more affordable single-family housing that I can see.
Well, once the housing bubble bursts, and it will burst, you'll see a correction in the pricing. But yeah, I mean, this is West Virginia, for God's sakes. Have you looked at the prices of the new houses they're building?
Yeah, I have. I watch real estate fairly closely, and plus in other states too. You know, as high as it is here, if you go to Virginia. It's twice as much.
Yeah, and I don't know how people live. I was playing golf up in Morgantown with a good friend of mine, and he's in construction management, and I kept asking him because there are these McMansions all around. Cheat Lake.
Yeah.
As far as the eye can see, that weren't there 10 years ago, and I kept asking him, who lives in these things? Because they're not cheap. And Morgantown, I mean, I guess there are some, you know, some doctors, that kind of thing, who are, you know, Mylan pharmaceutical people. But for the most part, it baffles me to think that somebody can afford to buy one of those things. It's, you know, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 homes.
Oh, that's, when you get down to Virginia,
Well, that's a tenement in Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, that's nothing down there. I mean, I was looking at some of those real estate magazines, and I commented to Melody. I says, well, we're going to need about $1.5 million for because, I mean, they have some beautiful homes down there. They really are. But, I mean, it's just far overkill all the time. I mean, it's...
Well, and a lot of it, if you do more reading on it, you'll find out a lot of that beauty is really only skin deep. There's a lot of litigation over these McMansions. They're built for crap.
Well... I can tell you for a fact that there's a very famous resort not too far from here that has $2 million homes,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen them put them together, and the building materials they use are no better than what they put in trailers. I mean, they use a press board and stuff like that. It's just cosmetics is what they just dress them up. But as far as the interior guts of them, they're just built just like anything else.
Sure. And they're going to last just like anything else. I mean, this house we live in has been here for a long, long time, and it's been here as long as it has because it was built rock solid.
Yeah.
It was built to last. I don't think you can say the same thing about those McMansions because, you know, they'll be bulldozed in another 20, 30 years for yet another development or, you know, something along. And most of those things are built on farmland or farmland.
That's another really scary thing. The farmland across America is just disappearing at an incredible rate.
Well, you talk about where we go when we fall in this Orlov article. bear in mind, you know, through the 70s and the collapse, most people don't realize the Soviet Union started collapsing long before Gorbachev ever got to power.
Yeah.
You know, when we were shipping grain to them, you know, for all we were worth, just to keep the Russian people from starving to death. Well, it's worth remembering, Gary, that last year, for the first time in about 50 years, we imported more food than we grew.
Well, I think eventually what's going to happen, I think if Russia is going to be in better shape than we are.
Well, they've got a little infrastructure for the general mass of their humanity.
Well, they made their infrastructure different. Not only that, we're much farther along in the resource depletion game than they are. They still have a lot of resources over there. We hit peak oil production back in 1971. They're due to hit it, I don't know, maybe this year or next year. So in other words, we're more or less, we're 30-some years ahead of them in the resource depletion game.
Right. Whether it's coal, you know, surface mining in Wyoming, you know, it's not so much mountaintop removal as it is, you know, just the whole, they remove the flatland, and I can't imagine that.
Well, what's wrong with these here yo-yos in West Virginia and other places? They act like they have to dig every last bit of coal we got as fast as they can possibly dig it and ship it out of here.
Well, because if they don't do that, then somebody else will get the money. And it's they want the money.
Well,
they wrap the flag around it and call it national security, and it makes me sick.
The thing I stress to these people is that coal becomes more valuable every day it's in the ground, and I'm not talking about it appreciating at 1% or 2% a year either. I mean, in this scenario that we're looking at with peak oil, coal is going to be extremely valuable. Not only that, don't you think we ought to save a little bit for our own people here?
Yeah, it might get cold.
It might get cold. We might want to run a few industries here ourselves.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I guess we're just going to ship it all out here at commodity prices.
Yeah, and if it's and remember the lawsuit that's still banging around out there. I haven't seen that it's been ruled on yet. The idea that if it gets shipped out of state, it's in interstate commerce and we can't tax it.
Oh, that's crazy.
You know, the greed is just it's greed upon greed upon greed upon greed.
And they get people to go along with it, like this ad they've got out there. Massey's got 50,000 jobs, people making what, 50 grand a year or something like that. And people, I swear to God, I believe they'd sell their own mother for that kind of money.
Well, yeah, but if I noticed an article about this, I guess it was in the Sunday Gazette. Massey cannot, I mean, they can't find the people to do the work they want them to do, and I like to think that maybe the morality issue is catching up with them.
Well, I would hope so, especially here in West Virginia. You can understand out-of-staters coming here and not giving a hoot, but, you know, our own people here should care.
Well, and you hope that they do, because, you know, they're paying this great money and they've got company doctors and company stores, and by golly, they'll be on the, you know, if Massey gets a chance, they'll be on the cutting edge of coming, bringing back scrip.
You know what, I'll tell you what, Bob, I'll make you a guarantee. I guarantee none of these people that start to work for Massey tomorrow are going to retire from Massey, because they'll have done dug the coal long before then. So in other words, it's just simply a deal where you get what you can get today and the heck with tomorrow, because I tell you what, Massey's not going to be around that long, not the way they're digging coal.
Well, that's the mercantilist attitude. Anybody who thinks that they're signing on for a career with Massey is drunker than George Bush.
Absolutely. It's at best a temporary job. Most of them guys, maybe they'll be doing good to get 10 years on a job somewhere, and then it's all over with. And once it's all over with, then what?
And Massey, well, Massey's not going to engage in any retraining. Massey's not going to clean up its mess when it leaves. It's the age-old story of extraction industry politics and practice. When they leave, the place dries up and dies. I mean, there's the little town that I'm near was a booming concern. Great, wonderful, relatively large small town once upon a time when coal was king around here. Coal dried up, people went away, company left, and it's just a little dead spot in the side of the road now.
And you know what? You have to add something else into the mix, too. You know, you go into these other states, and you know I travel a lot. They have much more of an entrepreneurial spirit in these other states. And West Virginians, for one reason or another, never really developed that. And it could be actually, but largely because of coal.
I think that's exactly. You have to lay it at that doorstep.
Well, we're going to have to snap out of that. I mean, you go into a state like Ohio or Wisconsin or lots of states, and it's amazing the things that people get into to make a buck. And here in West Virginia, we dig coal, we get a welfare check, or we get a bus ticket. I mean, that's about...
Well, but the coal industry doesn't want that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. They do everything in their power to keep that from happening.
Because, well, not only them, but I think state government does a lot too.
Well, to the extent that it's I accord this damnation across party lines to the extent that state government is sucked up against big coal. Of course, they're complicit. Yeah. You know, we need forward thinking.
Well, I tell you, our government here, I mean, there's no way in the world anybody's never going to convince me that they aren't really right in bed with the insurance companies, the coal companies, and about anybody else that's really trying to put the shed to the
wall. Well, they absolutely are. And, you know, we could do ourselves a favor by trying to find people who aren't that way and letting them run for office. Now, my particular feeling on it is you're never going to get somebody running on the Republican ticket that's that way. You might have a chance of reforming the Democratic Party in this state. But a third party is not going to get a toehold, and like I said, you can't fix the Republican Party; it's broke beyond all repair. But you know, there are people out there. You know, there's people like Carrie Webster down in Kanawha County. She's rock solid, and she's not afraid to call sleaze when she sees it.
But you know, Bob, it's the problem is just one or two people here or there just isn't going to do it. We're going to have to really clean the slate.
I understand that, and that starts with finding politicians who are or potential politicians who are willing to talk about what matters to working families. And what matters to working families, Gary, frankly, is not compromising the insides of a woman, or putting a big rock in a building, or you know any of the other stuff that captures the political imagination of voters around here, supposedly.
Well, we all have our feelings on certain social issues, but I'll tell you what, that's kind of like that little story you were telling me tonight about them following that plane around for 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's just a distraction. They really don't want us to watch the money. They want us to watch debates on all sorts of social things.
Sure.
But don't watch the money, because if you start watching the money, then you're going to...
You're going to run around the yards tearing at your clothing and your hair.
You know, and I read something today, I don't know if it's true or not. The United States, of all industrialized nations, has the lowest minimum wage.
I don't doubt that in the least. We also have one of the highest infant mortality rates.
I mean, that's really... I do believe this is the greatest country on earth. I don't think I'd want to live anywhere else. But at the same time, these people out there that say America, love it or leave it, blah, 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 they're looking at the whole equation with blinders on.
Well, the attitude that there's nothing to fix about America, that... You know, we're good and godly and upstanding, and God's going to look out for us.
You mean the Rush Limbaugh attitude?
Well, yeah. I mean, that and the rest of the right-wing hate fest. You know, people call me a hater and a, you know, un-American, things like that. Now, I wouldn't say any of this if I was un-American. I say the things I say because I passionately love my country. I want my country to grow and prosper, and I want America to be America for everybody who's an American. And yet, you know, I get called names over it.
Well, we have our different perspectives. I don't doubt your sincerity in wanting everybody to have a better way.
I mean, can you imagine? You know, it was months ago, Gary. We talked about, and it was the White House's own numbers, talking about the effect that the new Medicare prescription drug plan would have on a senior citizen, a woman with a monthly income of like $750. Even as it stood right there and right then, without the prescription drug benefit, she was getting $27 a week or $27 a month in food stamps.
Yeah.
That's no America. That's not the America that they taught me about when they were teaching me to say the Pledge of Allegiance and sing the National Anthem and recite the Gettysburg Address. That's not that America. An America that doesn't have more than $27 a month for a little old lady and can afford a war where we're paying $29 a day to feed rotten meat and rotten vegetables to our troops. That's no America that I recognize, Gary.
Well, let's just stand back from this problem just a minute. And let's just say that there's a tremendous argument going on in America over resource allocation. We're paying it. We're paying for it.
Yeah.
But we're just arguing about how it's going.
And who, well, it, allocation and who gets it and how. And, you know, again, cutting the food stamp program just makes me crazy because I can't imagine a country that would countenance doing that and at the same time be in church every time the doors are open hollering Hosanna and talking about what a godly place we are.
Well, and then, you know, there's so many sides to these stories. You look at the money that they want to spend on Hurricane Katrina.
Now, I don't have any problem with helping those people out down there, but they just went totally nuts over it. This is a resource allocation problem. How come we can't spend a reasonable amount on those people and then spend reasonable amounts on these other things that are important? You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do. Look, there's no, it's the left has been tarred with this brush, Gary, of, well, you know, you just want to throw money at it and walk away. That's not us. I believe in doing it smart.
Well, let me put it this way, Bob. I have been a pretty rabid conservative at times. You and I have really, really differed. But this bunch of so-called conservatives we've got in there, they took away all the ammunition I had to use against the left. Because I used to be able to say, tax and spend liberal.
No, not anymore.
Shut my mouth if I say that.
Yeah. It's gone.
With friends like this, who needs enemies?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Bill Clinton, I believe, is probably the greatest conservative we had in the last 20 years.
There are people on the far left that say he was the finest moderate Republican president that this country has ever seen.
Well,
since maybe Eisenhower.
Physically, especially when you compare him to the Bushes and stuff like that. And you know, George Bush more or less kind of is panning out the way I figured he would. He's a lot like his dad. People are going to be so sick of him before his term is up, they will vote for Bozo to get him out of office.
Well, interesting you should mention that. David wrote in and said, George II is, after all, the son of George I. Please remember that George I threw up on a Chinese leader. Family
yeah.
tradition, don't you think?
I remember that. I remember my dad really got a laugh out of that when that happened. Yeah, that was he drank too much sake, I believe.
Well, you know, he had it. That's another one of the, you know, it was embarrassing to watch him trying to get out the locked door, Gary. That was bad enough. But it got worse when I got to thinking about the substance of what he was doing over there. It embarrasses me that the President of the United States has to go and speak ever so cautiously and ever so politely and ever so gently to, this is their word, their phrase, a brutal dictator. And we can't put any starch behind our human rights arguments because we don't think of them worth a damn. And what's more, we have to be so nice and polite to that brutal dictator because he's holding all of our bad paper and on a whim can destroy the American economy.
Yeah. Well, that's something a lot of people don't even consider, though, is our debt structure out there right now. And that's one of the things in this house of cards between that and peak oil. Things like that's going to bring this whole mess down, I believe. Now, I'm hoping for that because I live here like everybody else, but I tell you what, I believe we are going to suffer the same fate as the Soviet Union, except we're probably going to be in worse shape.
Well, we have a chance. I believe that we still have a chance to fix things, but it's going to take a really, really far-sighted, brilliant politician. You know, Clinton was able to pull it off in large part because, you know, he had the personality to drive the policy. I'm wondering about the field of candidates for 08. And moreover, you know, 06 is, we've got to have change in 06. Because you know, the polling numbers indicate that the whole wide world despises the Republican Congress, but if you dig a little deeper into it, they're not so crazy about the Democrats either, and my party had better start coming up with some hardcore alternatives to business as usual.
Well, you know, in the presidential election last time, the guy that I thought really had the best platform was Ralph Nader.
Well, Ralph's had great ideas all along, and I wish...
How far does a guy like him go?
Well, he can't. One, he's ancient, and two, he's proved himself to be a spaceman. We need his ideas, but we need his ideas in a place where we can put them to use. I love the Green folks. They're wonderful people, and they think a lot like me, and I would give anything if they would come into the Democratic Party and help us change it, help us take it away from the DLC people, help us take it away from the War Hawk people. We've got, my party, Gary, has got to offer real, meaningful, alternative solutions to very pressing problems. We, you know, Bush Light ain't going to cut it. We've been whipped on Bush Light three, four times now.
Bob, if the Democratic Party wants to break out of the mold that they're in right now, they're going to have to take Schumer, Feinstein, Pelosi, and that old cabal of leftists and get rid of them. I know what I'm talking about.
Now, I disagree with you. Those you call them leftists, they're leftists because they've been called that, okay?
I've been watching these people for years. I'll tell you, Bob, they're not mainstream. That is what the average American identifies the Democratic Party with today.
But what's unmainstream about them, Gary? That's what I'm getting at. These people, I mean, the people you mentioned believe in you, that if a working man is working and trying to support his family, he ought to make enough wages that he doesn't have to work three jobs to support that family. They believe that if you get sick, you ought to daggum well be able to go to the doctor.
They might believe that, but that's not how it's portrayed to the American people. What is portrayed to the American
people? Right, because we let them frame it, Gary. That's not...
No, it's more than that, Bob. Believe me, I'll tell you what. People like Schumer, you know, really, quite honestly, you should be embarrassed to have a man like that in your party. You should be embarrassed to have somebody like Feinstein in your party.
Well, I'm a lot more embarrassed to have somebody like Joe Lieberman in my party.
I like Joe Lieberman a lot more than any of those people.
I wish, you know... Well, that's because of your political leanings and philosophies, Gary. I mean, you're not crazy about the Republicans, but you go a little bit in that direction. So,
well, not anymore. They've done got me so sick anymore. I mean, I just can't even stand them. And you know, there's a lot of other people like that too. I mean, if you start listening to all your right leaning talk show hosts and everything like that, they give George Bush as much heck as you do.
Well, no, I haven't. No, wait a minute. I haven't caught Flimball or Hannity Job or O'Reilly doing any of that.
Well, maybe not. Maybe
you know,
not,
the savage.
Maybe not Rush. I don't think Rush ever would. But Hannity has. Hannity's been giving him a lot of grief lately. Michael Savage just rips.
Yeah, but the thing is, he rips him for all the wrong reasons. He rips him because he's not killing enough people. He rips him because he's not being mean enough to the poor. You know, and that just, you know, that's even wronger than he usually is wrong. Hey, we got to work this last break in, Gary. Good talking to you. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Nice talking to you.
Later. And a quick break. More phone calls if you want. 877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Troops. We hear it practically every day. We read it in the papers, on yard signs, on bumper stickers. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. For more than 60 years, the USO has tirelessly maintained a bridge back home for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and coast guardsmen around the world who fight to preserve the freedoms we hold so dear. The USO receives no government funding. It employs only private citizens and volunteers and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people to fulfill its mission. Help us support our troops. To find out more about the USO and how you can help, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at USO.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I'm just...
What is the Fourth Estate?
You know, in old days, it wasn't about the exclusive. It was about telling the truth. It was about making sure the truth was portrayed in the media, you know, in print and in television and on the radio. And now the news has become a manufactured item. Today news that today's media is complicit. And what we want to do and what we're going to do and what we are doing with the Fourth Estate is to create a place, well, if you will, a safe haven for the truth.
Fourth Estate Radio. It's again time to hold them accountable.
For the latest details, visit fourthestateradio.com.
All right, a couple of emails before we go back to the phones. Just a few minutes left in tonight's program. From our pal Kelly, Bush is my shepherd, I shall be in want. He maketh me to lie down on park benches. He leadeth me beside still factories. He restoreth my doubts about the Republican Party. He leadeth me into paths of unemployment for his cronies' sake. Yea, though no weapons of mass destruction have been found, he makes me continue to fear evil. His tax cuts for the rich and his deficit spending discomfort me. He anointeth me with never-ending doubt. Verily my days and savings and assets are kaput. Such poverty and hard living shall follow me all the days of his administration, and my jobless child shall dwell in my basement forever. And it's attributed to a James E. Judd of Sun City, California. That's beautiful stuff. And from our pal Sue, Dear Bob, if you want to see human greed, watch HGTV. You have people who have to buy 5,000 square foot homes for two people. They had one on there the other day, and in the master bedroom was a glass wall where you could lay in bed and watch people swim in the pool. The window was below the surface of the pool. You have homes with huge pools and man-made waterfalls in places in California and Arizona where there isn't an excess of water anyway. In some places in California, you have people paying $500,000 for a 1,000-square-foot house or $3,000 lot rent for a single-wide trailer. Sometimes you wonder where the greed will end. Well, Sue, I know where. I've got a pretty good idea where it ends. And the soundtrack that goes with it's an old ditty called Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Back to the phones. Jeff's back with us. Hey, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Hey, I was going to talk about some of the budget cuts you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, wait, real quick.
Yeah.
Was that a mugging at the end of the Mountaineer game?
Yeah, he got him with the body. They should have had it.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, he should have, yeah. They're wanting to try to cut $50 billion out. That's the cut. But
yeah.
It's really nothing. It's the equivalent, which over the next five, it's that over the next 5 years. We're still in the next 5 years projected to spend $14 trillion in the Fed.
Well, I know. You can get lost in those numbers. I understand belt tightening. We've got some enforced belt tightening of this war.
That's nothing. You know, when the Korean
When
the Korean War started, you know we cut discretionary spending in this country 25%. 25%. And this $50 billion that we can't even get through now is the equivalent of 2 cents out of every $10.
Well, but Jeff, I think we could probably get it through if it was done in the right places and for the right reasons. You know, it's worth remembering, you know, this is not some ancient debt that we've been working at for a while. This is a debt that's 5 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it can be fixed, but it's going to have to be fixed with some fiscal responsibility.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, you cannot finance a war on the backs of people and ask people to go hungry for it. That's the wrong place to cut.
Well, you know, I don't think that the cuts they're talking about in anything are not really that major. Nobody is going to lose their food stamps. There's money left over in that food stamp.
It's already projected the number of people who are going to lose their food stamps.
There's money left over in that. That food stamp program is overfunded.
Have you ever lived on them, Jeff? And I'm not being mean. Have you ever gotten food stamps?
No, but I've always been able to provide for myself.
Okay, well, you know, there are people in this country who rely on food stamps.
I believe that.
And it's not because they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they're stupid, and it's not because they're not trying.
But again,
look. And what I'm getting at here, Jeff, is if we're gonna cut the food stamp budget, look at where it is that we're cutting from.
Well,
nobody is. I mean, that little old lady that's getting $27 a month in food stamps, and she makes $700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we not great enough in this nation to see to it that that woman has a square meal on her three squares a day?
Well, that's an isolated instance.
No, it's not. Those were the White House's own numbers of an average Social Security recipient dealing with the Medicare prescription drug bill.
But if they're getting 60, 70, 80, or 100, you know, that prescription drug bill is going to cost us $700 billion over the next 10 years.
Yeah, and they didn't even tell us the truth about that, Jeff. And that wasn't Democrats, man. That wasn't tax and spend Democrats ramming that through.
But, you know,
in the still of the night.
Part of the $50 billion that's the cut, $5 billion of it is defense cuts. Nobody talks much about those. The Medicaid cuts. You hear Medicaid cuts. Well, that's not really the truth. They're cutting the growth of Medicaid from 7.3% a year to 7% a year. It's still going to grow at 7% a year.
I understand that.
When we call it a cut, we're not being exactly honest.
But Jeff, I'm trying to approach it from the human needs aspect. But anyway you slice it, we're out of time.
I understand.
All right,
thanks,
later,
man.
All right, fun show tonight. Appreciate all of your input, email, phone call, however you did it. Just sitting there listening and maybe chatting in a chat room. That's cool too. The show, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. Brian Reznor announces. Randy Kerbway engineered the whole affair. And, of course, the inestimable Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org manages the stream, as well as the archives of this and many other fine liberal and progressive talk shows at WhiteRoseSociety.org. The show, of course, every night is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And more than anything else, always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.